Welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring.
Hello and welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring. I'm Rhys Waters and with me is Jesse Harley.
Hello.
And we have some special guests today on the show. We have Jeremy, Taylor and Brian from Sick Boy. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
I want to start a podcast called Welsh Politics is Boring.
It is actually boring.
Listen here, motherfucker.
It'd be three episodes and the podcaster would be dead.
What gives you the right to move here from Wales and tell us how our politics are boring?
Why don't you guys tell us about your podcast and its origins? How did it start and how long have you guys been doing it and any entertaining?
Yeah, sure. So our podcast in a nutshell is we are a podcast that sits and has long-form conversations with people about what it is like to live life with a chronic or terminal illness, but with a twist, and the twist is that it's a comedy podcast. So, you know, we spend our time trying to root out and mine for the levity that it exists within the human experience of being sick, and it stems from the fact that I live with cystic fibrosis, and my two best friends here, Brian and Taylor, are, you know, like pretty much perfectly healthy specimens. And this whole
specimens.
Show, this whole show started from a conversation that the three of us had over microphones, where the boys were given like a free pass to ask me any and all the questions you'd ever want to ask a sick person. And in looking back at that first conversation that we had, we realized that, you know, this was something that we found to be very, very, there was lots of humor. You know, we found it to be very funny, but it was also very educational for the guys. They learned a lot about me, things that they had never known up to that point. And then for myself, as the person who was expressing all these things that I've gone through in my life, it was very empowering and like uplifting. And there was something very cathartic and therapeutic about it. And so we decided to test it out and see if it was a fluke or if we could recreate what we did, but with somebody else. So we called up the sickest person we knew at the time and asked them if they wanted to come in. His name was Matt. He had brain cancer. And he sat down on the mics with us, recorded another conversation that was equally funny. Just as eye-opening and uplifting, and the ball just kind of kept rolling from there. And fast forward now, we're like 5 years in, and we've talked to people from all over North America.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised at how often you find like audio porn just sneaks its way into the conversation about what it's like to be sick. It's actually like extremely surprising.
Plus, the other thing is all three of us are idiots, so we don't have an intellect like Rhys to educate us. So we had to rely on having guests who actually knew about their own personal experiences to talk about them. Yeah. So yeah,
sure, the thing I really like about your show is that when I listen to it, you are able to ask people the questions with illnesses and conditions and things that you want to ask. The nitty gritty of life that you can't be would be too scared to ask. I don't know. You seem to have a way of getting people to open up and talk about things in such a way that like they that isn't part of like polite conversation or isn't in a pamphlet or in like an instructional video or anything or any of the information up there. I think there's the and that's what makes it, and that humanizes people with those with conditions or whatever they kind of are dealing with. It allows it. Yeah, it just makes them so relatable in that sense. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the things that we realized, I wouldn't say early on, but maybe about a year into doing it, we were having these conversations about like, why is it that we're able to do this in the room with, you know, four mics and a person that we've maybe never met before, but it's so hard to have these conversations in the real world. And we kind of came to this conclusion that scheduling the time or making the dedicated space to do it, it's like you're giving somebody permission. It's like, hey, this 1 hour time slot next week is going to be this carved out space where you've got this free pass to ask these crazy questions for the person that's going in to be like, hey, open book, tell me anything. I'll tell you anything you want to know. And mentally that space is carved out in advance. And so there's not much of that caught off guard nature that you get when you ask questions, you know, when you run into somebody on the street. Although we do try to promote that, you know, we should be kind of asking, you know, wackier or more interesting questions to get sort of like the best or the most authentic version out of people when we're having, you know, regular conversation.
To give you a quick example, yeah. we sat down with this guy who was paralyzed from the waist down, and we sat down and it was 8 o'clock in the morning. We were recording with him in Vancouver when we were on a trip there, and we started the microphones, we started recording, and I looked across the table to him and I said, "So, tell me, does your penis work?" And that was the first question that started that conversation. And you know, like after we kind of got through that first fog of the first 5 minutes, it was really great.
That's the perfect illustration of my point. That was great.
But Reese, I know that you kind of had prepped a little history lesson for us, and in a way that sort of like ties into some of the themes that we kind of touch on Sick Boy or sort of is like relatable to some of the stuff that we've talked about on the show in the past. I'm kind of like you, Jesse, where I'm like, I think Canadian politics are boring, but
sweet. Reese, virtual high five.
Yeah. Reese, I feel like maybe you're about to tear those walls down and prove otherwise. What do you have lined up for us here?
Okay. So, do you all like healthcare? Are you fans of healthcare?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say
we
like,
sure do talk about it a lot.
Yeah, healthcare's been. I mean, it's played a vital role in keeping me alive for these past 32 years. So yeah, I would say I'm a fan.
10 out of 10 for healthcare in general. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've had the experience of like a European health system. I've come to Canada, and I know Canadians are really proud of healthcare and the healthcare system, and it is really good. It is really good.
On the side, Reese, I know nothing about the UK health system. Can you give us a quick 30-second?
Okay. It was in 1948, they launched the National Health Service. It was one of the first ones in the world. And it's universal healthcare free at the point of delivery. So basically,
I'm just kidding.
What does that mean, free at the point of delivery?
It means you don't need any ID. You don't need to give a number. You just walk into a hospital and you get treated for whatever you've got. Whether you've broken your leg or you've got cancer, you'll get all of the treatment you need to get healthy.
Why are you booing that? That sounds amazing.
it was a sarcasm boo.
Didn't come through. That's why.
Yeah. Taylor doesn't believe in anything unless it's worked for.
Even in Wales, you don't even pay for any kind of medication. All medication is free.
Wow. I say wow, but I haven't paid for medication like once in my life. But that's also because all the medication that I take is tied to my illness, and that's very specific to Nova Scotia. Whereas if I moved away, I would have to pay for some of my meds. So Canada's a weird one because it's not the same across the board. But
well, it seems like the UK is kind of is sort of like the next level version of what we've got here in Canada. Mm-hmm.
Guys, although, I don't want to delay this from keep on going forward, but I do have to say that my mom, she had an operation where she had a stent put in her belly button, and she has to self-catheter through that because she had bladder cancer. And she has to pay for all of her supplies that she needs. She needs to use a catheter 4 times a day, and a box of catheters costs her anywhere from $250 to $500 a month, depending on how many she uses.
Oh my God.
And it's not covered. None of it. So,
which is such
I
a
guess
weird
Reese,
thing.
In the UK, would it be covered? That would be covered?
Yeah. She tell her to move to Wales.
Yeah, fuck. Mm. Okay.
They won't even ask to see her passport or anything.
And she'll probably see remarkable. A dramatic increase in sort of like quality of life because she will no longer be incentivized to be dehydrated all the time.
I mean, mm-hmm. Rye, has she, like I know that it happened a little while back, but I'm sure there's still some around. But the whole like sort of outlawing of plastic straws, like could she not just go to Starbucks and be like, give me all your plastic straws? Because like they're not going to use them anymore. So like could
she has. Jimmy rigged them all together with some tape and she actually sucks it out of her own belly.
Jeff Epstein style.
It's unconventional, but
it's kind of like when when you're siphoning gas from somebody's car, when you're running low, right? Everybody does that, right?
Yeah. Just don't forget to spit it out.
Thank you for putting that in my head.
Sorry for derailing you, Reese.
Sorry. Have you guys heard of Tommy Douglas?
Yeah. That is a familiar name. I'm guessing he's a politician of some sort in the past here in Canada.
Isn't he like the father of healthcare in Canada?
That's exactly who he is. You get 10 points, Brian. He's the father of socialized medicine in Canada.
I feel like we should know that, guys. Yeah,
exactly. Well, we
this
do
is
now.
Why we need to listen to Canadian politics is boring.
So in 2004, he was voted the greatest Canadian of all time by a CBC television series. He beat Terry Fox, Pierre Trudeau, and Wayne Gretzky to win.
Don't those guys have the Order of Merit? There's only four Canadians who have ever been awarded the Order of Merit, and I think Tommy Douglas is one of them. Alongside, I think Jean Chrétien won it as well, which is, I don't know,
okay,
that
Brian,
guy seems kind of lame
Brian,
to me.
Okay, Brian, you prepared for this. We get it.
Yeah, you're showing
How
off.
How did I prepare for this?
We get
I'm
it.
I'm a Canadian citizen, and I'm proud
Dude,
of my
Dude, I can see
my,
your
my
eyes
heritage.
Tracking the Wikipedia page that you're looking at.
No, they're not. Okay.
So he was the premier of... now, do you know what? This is embarrassing. I moved to Canada. This is the one province I can't pronounce. Saskatchewan?
That's pretty good.
That's the accent.
That's good.
You did better than the people that live there.
Saskatchewan. Yeah.
I think that's actually better than we would pronounce it here, because I've spent a lot of time there, and I used to say Saskatchewan, and they
Isn't
will
that
correct,
how it's pronounced?
That's how I say it.
They will tell you that it is Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan. So he was the premier of Saskatchewan. He was a member of parliament, and he founded the modern day political party, the NDP. In the 1930s, he kind of experienced drought and the Great Depression, and he saw lots of people dying because there were no doctors in Canada if you didn't have any money and you couldn't pay for medical care. And this was kind of like the driving force of his political career. He wanted to provide healthcare to everyone. So in 1947, the Saskatchewan Hospital Services Plan came to effect. So basically, they created like a health... socialized medicine in Saskatchewan, and then the federal government saw how much of a success it was, and that was expanded to full health insurance nationally in 1969, where the federal government would pay 50% and the provincial government would pay 50%.
I like this guy.
Yeah, so he's well regarded for a reason. He provided healthcare like in a way that had never existed before to the whole country. So he deserved the order. Was it the Order of Merit?
I think it's the Order of Merit that he got. Yeah.
Is that the highest recognition?
He was invested into the Order of Canada, became a member of Canada's Privy Council in 1984.
Did he get the Order of Merit too, though? Because isn't the Order of Canada like a stepping stone to the Order of Merit?
I don't really know, Bri. I don't know.
You're the one with the Wikipedia
page
open,
dude.
Yeah,
I mean, this is the first
time
I've ever heard the Order of Merit ever.
I believe the Order of Merit, highest order you can receive, citation needed, 19 parentheses. Yes, I think it's highest merit. If I'm recalling.
Got a great memory.
If I can recall from the
So you
memory.
Actually do have the Wikipedia page open. So I was right, is what you're saying. And then the Order of Canada is the highest you can receive within Canada, but the Order of Merit's above it.
So, yeah, okay, cool, yeah.
So despite being an awesome dude and everyone, like, thinking that he's...
What we've boiled this down to is he's an awesome dude.
Exactly, yeah.
I like it, yeah. He sounds like a pretty rad dude to me.
Did some good stuff, good dude. So,
is that on his tombstone?
He
did some good stuff.
But he also had a dark side.
I was waiting for
don't
this
they
part.
All, don't like, they all? Let me guess. He's got a statue somewhere, and we're about to pull that motherfucker down. You're about to reveal some shit, aren't you?
This subject matter is pretty disturbing. But
great, awesome.
Yes. Yes.
I think we picked the right collaboration.
Yes.
Here we go.
Have you ever heard of eugenics?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I believe.
Yeah, let me open that Wikipedia tab.
I've pre-prepared a definition. It is
eugenics is. Can I take a stab at what eugenics is?
Go for it.
Is eugenics? Yeah. When I hear the word eugenics, I think of. I think of Mengele. I think of the Nazi scientist that was doing some like really weird shit with like scientific shit with Jewish prisoners at like Auschwitz and stuff. Is eugenics like?
Yeah, it's like selective breeding for humans.
Yeah, yeah, trying to like control. Right. So like
dog breeds where they go, yeah, let's make this dog breed have bigger ears, and they selectively breed the ones. It was that, but applied to humans, which is
My god,
yeah, that sounds disturbing.
That sounds not cool.
So the definition is a set of beliefs and practices that aim to alter the genetics of the human population historically by excluding people and groups judged to be inferior and promoting those judged to be superior.
Whoa.
So you're hitting the nail on the head with the whole Nazi thing. It kind of sounds like.
Yeah, that definition's been in hot water forever.
Are you going to tell us that he made healthcare free so that he could use it for that purpose?
Well, he genuinely believed he could improve society through that. And this was like really popular in Canada and the Western world in like the 1930s. And I have got a...
Eugenics?
Eugenics were huge. Actually, laws were passed in quite a few places in Western democracies at the time. And there's a newspaper from 1933. It's the Montreal Gazette from November the 14th. And the headline is... sterilization of unfit advocated, feeble-minded increasing at disproportionate rate in Canada, the case for eugenics. Quebec fortunate in that best stock has large families. So,
I guess it's like, it's crazy to think that from the lens of 2020, but when you go back, I mean, if you went back to when was the emancipation of slaves, 1861, 1863, somewhere around there.
63.
And if you were to poll people back then in like, let's say New York, who thought that slaves should be freed, you'd probably be hard pressed to hear the exact same people saying that they think that slaves should be freed, thinking that black people were not inferior. The two ideologies or the two thought processes would have been separated. You know what I mean?
They even created that like kind of fake science. Is it phrenology where they measure the brain and the skull. The indentations?
Yeah.
And during slavery, they tried to prove that was like an actual science, and it was obviously just made up just to reinforce people's own
racism
arguments and not make them doubt themselves for the terrible things they were doing.
So what kind of eugenics? Like, I guess like the word eugenics is pretty, could be looked at as quite a broad.
Yeah.
Practice, I guess, if you will. It's like was he going like we need a world of only redheads? Or like
what did he think was superior?
Yeah, what was his end goal?
Right now.
Yeah.
He was really just pro CRISPR, and he was really ahead of his time.
He understood genome mapping.
In 1933 he wrote a thesis, and it was titled "The Problems of the Subnormal Family." And what he was talking about was sterilization of mental defectives and those incurably diseased. So he was trying to essentially stop people they thought were not fit to have children and raise children and function society from being able to breed.
So boy, Tommy D?
I'd be a goner in his world if things, I guess, like went the way he wanted them to. Like, I guess, like, so I'm born with CF. Although, wait, hold on. What the fuck am I talking about? I'm sterile anyway. I can't make a kid.
It's a good point, though. Like the idea is they wanted to remove genetically inherited diseases. So exactly those kinds of things would have been scrutinized, I guess, in families. And I'm going to apologize in advance for some of this language, but this is some quotes from his thesis.
Oh, Jesus. Here we go.
Basically... So he argues that one of the key causes of poverty are subnormal families, and he the ones he described as mentally inadequate are anywhere from a high-grade moron to mentally defective, of low moral character, and is a burden on the public purse. So, I mean, that's a really general term. How do you decide who is what? It's kind of subjective.
Ooh. Oh, my God, absolutely. Right. And they're really take. I mean, in its simplest form is like taking, and like you mentioned right off the top, is, you know, that's something that we've been doing with dogs, for example, forever. Well, I guess for the past 500, 600 years or something like that, to when we started using dogs for certain purposes.
And look what we've done. Pugs. Yeah, I mean, yeah, my right. God, man. That's just...
I have a French bulldog, and every time I go to the vet, I actually have this like sickening realization that he just shouldn't really be alive. And I'm like, God, this is horrible. But applying that same, I mean, I know that we all just inherently in 2020 know that applying that same principle or that same logic to humans makes no sense. And I guess I'm wondering like why is that so obvious to us now in the way that, and is it because we see humans as opposed to every other like species and we just go, man, we are just such a jump up from everything else on this planet that, you know, we have consciousness, or I guess what we define as consciousness. And this is like, being a conscious being is sort of this like sacred ground. And we apply all these, you know, these rights and civil liberties in good countries, I guess, across the board that says, hey, this is what you are entitled to simply by being a human, and shit like that, like eugenics, is a big no-no.
I don't know, dude, though. There's a lot of places in the world where
that's our next
people
t-shirt.
Aren't even afforded
eugenics
that
is a
liberty.
Big no-no.
I mean, it's pretty wild that this was a part of his like mandate, and like this was something that he, you know, like that wrote his fucking thesis on, and yet still like, it's just wild to think that there's this side of his like professional life, and then this other side where it's like he was the greatest Canadian of all time. Like I'm reading like his thesis. Which
but that's just us looking back at it, because at that time we would have gone,
I know.
I wonder if he's onto something. You know, yeah, I mean, there would have been a population of people that thought that it was okay.
Of course. But just how fucking crazy is it to see, like, so those deemed to be subnormal, like you were saying, Reese, low intelligence, moral laxity. What the fuck is moral laxity?
Did you just drink too much?
Yeah,
or
yeah,
like
exactly.
Gamble,
like,
or,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you're promiscuous.
Exactly.
So people who are subnormal because of low intelligence, moral laxity, or venereal disease would be sent to state farms or camps. This is the idea. It's like, you moral lax person, we put you in a camp, okay? We put you in a concentration camp because you're morally lax and you have venereal disease and you're not that smart. So you go in the concentration camp, and then those judged to be mentally defective or incurably diseased, so you with the CF and you with the Down syndrome, we sterilize you. We put you in...
I'm telling you that he would get elected now in the United States, because you look at him and he's got the healthcare policy of Bernie Sanders with the populist like fascist qualities of Donald Trump. If you marry those two, those two together,
yeah, I think you're onto something,
Brian. You got the fucking next president of the United States.
Well, here, how about we do this? I mean, we could go on for days about criticizing the error of his thinking, which I think we can all agree on is obvious, but. When did this way of thinking come under criticism of him? When did people start to say that thing that this awesome dude did is not so awesome?
Well, this in the mid-30s, 24 US states, Alberta and BC, had already passed laws mandating the sterilization of those found to be intellectually disabled or morally degenerate. So this was already a thing. He wasn't alone in this. Mm-hmm. This was like a really common, widespread theory
this
that people.
This is fascinating.
But this is before World War II, right? This is in
pre-World
the 30s.
War II. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the crazy thing is that like you're talking about him sending people to camps, but also he wanted people to have medical certification before they were allowed to get married. You know, you had to be tested medically to make sure that you were gonna your genes together would be creating a healthy human being or a desirable human being, I guess, in that sense, as they might define it.
So correct me if I'm wrong then. Is this when this, you know, so I guess this was like kind of mainstream thinking, you know, there was a lot of people that were really on board for this idea in the early 30s. Is the discovery of like the atrocities that the Nazis did near the end of World War II, like it was it upon that discovery that the world kind of had this shift where they went, whoa, wait a minute, this idea of eugenics is like
not
very
really
dangerous
because,
or evil,
because there was segregation until 1964. So like even after World War II, there was a class of people here that thought, oh, hey, we're better than this other class, this subclass that we're not giving these other rights to.
Yeah, right.
So but like, it wasn't the end of World War II that
no,
like
no, I know, Brian, but is segregation and eugenics? Those are different things.
No, but it's believing that there's a class of people that's better than another. So like eugenics is it comes from the same ideological core, I believe.
It became really unfashionable after World War II because I think the Germans took it to like a really
unfashionable.
Yeah, <That's>, you know what I mean. It wasn't
eugenics
like a
is
common
so not in fashion anymore.
So wasteful.
That was it off. It was off. Became off.
All I know is that our individual comedy shows just got super, super funny. Just like, God, man. I'm sitting here just listening to this, like I'm just waking up. Don't forget, like, and so, like,
and you don't mean that. You don't mean that in like the civil rights sort of movement way.
No, I mean literally waking up. Yeah, yeah, I'm literally waking up, and the first thing that's going into my ear holes are talking about eugenics and Nazis, and I'm like, oh my God. Tell me more.
So, Jeremy, to your point, the Nazis were the thing that redeemed Tommy Douglas and made him completely abandon these beliefs and see like the error of his ways. So he visited Germany in 1936 on this kind of like some kind of conference or something, I guess.
He was like, yeah, he was like, you guys are doing it? Oh, we're thinking about doing it.
Show
me how you do it. And he gets there and is like, oh, God.
They booked out a big convention center. There was a podcast booth, you know. So essentially, he witnessed Hitler giving a rally and also saw some of the eugenics policies up close that were taken to this kind of extreme, like, fascist logic.
Wow.
And the only quote I could find was the word frightful. Apparently he used that word to describe it. And that was a big turning point. But I mean, Nazi Germany was, you know, I mean, it's already pretty extreme eugenics in North America and in other European countries. But the Nazis were taking it to that extreme of, you know, like actually, you know, wiping out people who were not classed as desirable. They were financially incentivizing the people they thought were desirable. So they would actually pay people who had that kind of genetic makeup they approved of to have children and to breed as much as possible. And then they were sterilizing the people who they didn't see because they were trying to build this, you know, their idea of
the
a
master
super
race. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So let me just kind of get a bigger picture of this whole, like, just around the World War II, before, during, and then after. So before, North America, as you say, was very big into eugenics, and they were trying different things, and it was very popular in the public opinion and whatnot. And then, I don't know if this had any correlation, the Nazis were like, hey, that's a great idea, and they took it to this insane extreme. And then after World War II ended, North America looked at what the Nazis did, which is what they were doing, and they're like, whoops, we may have been overstepping. Okay, so maybe that wasn't the greatest idea we did.
What's so wacky to me about eugenics, and just to kind of go back to something we were talking about right
so
at the beginning.
What's so wacky to me about eugenics? The next book by Taylor McGill.
Something that's really, really common in stand-up comedy is somebody thinking that a comedian is hilarious and really funny until they become the subject of the comedy. And then all of a sudden some people have, you know, all of a sudden, well, this, you know, this, this comedy set isn't so funny anymore because now I'm not, because now I'm the butt of the joke instead of laughing at the joke. And it kind of strikes me as, and you, you can kind of see how eugenics might become a popular idea amongst a large population of white people who have, in a country like the US and Canada with large populations of white people who are thinking to themselves when they see eugenics, I'm part of the good group. I'm part of the group that's going to get, because this is what's coming out in the literature. And then it's like, and then you've got subgroups of, you know, and now let's just say, for example, everybody who's white is going, hey, like in the literature, they're saying that that white people are in this group, that should go on and be breeded for, whatever. And then it's like, okay, but white people with, you know, children who have cystic fibrosis, it's like, well, now you're not in that group anymore. And so then those people are like, hey, whoa, hey, I thought that I was in the group. I thought that I was a part of it. And then quickly realizing that everybody, almost everybody on the planet, at some point in this sick game of eugenics, is no longer a part of the group that gets to go forward and be in this, you know, whatever they thought it was, a master race. Like, everybody on some level has some type of, whether it's a medical flaw or it's a mental flaw or it's a physical flaw or whatever. Like, we all come in with something that's not perfect.
That's where Hitler lost momentum when he started talking about the Aryan race, because he was like all of a sudden weeding out like the brown haired, brown eyed people?
Yeah. And he was like, damn it, that's me. He's like, shit, I just realized that I just lost at my own game.
I mean, I really like the story of Tommy Douglas, because ultimately he almost did like a complete turnaround. So rather than saying we should sterilize, we should kind of stop people with health issues and with mental health problems from being able to breed and be part of normal society, he went the other way, where when he became premier of Saskatchewan, he actually introduced therapy and vocational training. And his policies almost were the complete opposite, where it was, rather than ignoring or limiting these people's role in society, we need to support them and help them be as proactive and contribute to society in the way they can. He also increased funding for psychiatry as well. So it's like, story of someone growing as a human being from like a moment.
Good thing cancel culture wasn't a thing back then.
He
never would have had a chance to go on and do all those awesome things.
I mean, I gotta say, it's been a roller coaster learning about this guy, because at first I was like, I love him. And then the next second I'm like, this fuck this Nazi. And now I'm like, yeah, you know what? This guy's all right in my book.
I guess maybe that's why he didn't. So just to fact check myself, I did actually Wikipedia to see if he won the Order of Merit.
I knew it.
No, I just Wikipedia'd now, and I was wrong.
Oh, he
didn't
confirming.
Win the Order of Merit. The only four Canadians that have won the Order of Merit is William Lyon Mackenzie King.
Mackenzie King, no.
Dr. Penfield. Dr. Penfield, isn't that the
Dr.
burnt
Penfield,
toast?
Dr. Penfield, of course, yeah.
Burnt toast.
Lester B. Pearson and Jean Chrétien.
I go to his airport all the time.
So the confused look on Reese's face right now, as we're all, to our podcast listeners, we're in a video conference. Reese is not a so when all four of us, like when you said Dr. Penfield, all of us, all four
no
of us
idea.
Were like,
no
like
idea.
Burnt toast. And Reese is just staring in confusion. He did not grow up with Canadian Heritage Minutes.
Oh my God, no. Reese, you need to,
right?
You need
so
to Google
he doesn't
and
know
watch
what we're talking about.
Canadian Heritage Minutes.
It was basically the 1 minute version of your guys' podcast and TV commercials.
That's right.
Because they were really unintentionally funny.
Yeah. poorly reenacted. I need these baskets back.
I was going to say that.
It's only one more mile.
Both of you, I cannot
through the air,
word.
Across the ocean.
The first time ever.
I still have no idea what you're talking about.
it's okay, you got some Reese. YouTube and
okay. Yeah, bud.
ultimately then, Tommy Douglas, he retired from politics in 1979, having kind of set up full health insurance, and he passed away in 1986 at the age of 81 from cancer.
Wow.
And I think I think what a life though, and you know, right, yeah. About cancel culture, mm-hmm. like not accepting that people can change and then also become champions for the thing that you never thought they would is. I think he's still a great Canadian because he learned from his. He learned the error of his ways and from his awful, awful beliefs that he once
absolutely.
Had.
Absolutely, which I think is probably the ultimate thing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that's something we, especially in today's current culture of divisiveness, like we're dividing countries. We're dividing. That's what we're doing, at like, or at least what's happening. It's really sad. And like, in order for people to get their voice heard, we quickly label and divide. And it's nice to be reminded that people's minds can change. People can grow. People can learn. But right now we're labeling evil and good. This is one way of thinking. This is the right way of thinking. That's the wrong way of thinking. And then there's no in between. There's no gray area. And there's no room for growth. Once you've labeled someone, they're labeled for life in our current. So that we can quickly. It's horrible, but that's what's happening. So it's really nice to hear that there's stories of people who have been like just horrible, horrible human beings that have.
Well, everybody thought Donald Trump could only drink with two hands, but he proved us all wrong.
Oh my God, the water thing.
Yeah.
Well, I gotta say, this is that was a history lesson that was. A Canadian politics history lesson that was not boring. Now, Brian, as you said earlier, we should know Tommy Douglas. I will never forget who that man was and what he did for this country and what he almost did to this country. thankfully, didn't. But thanks a lot for giving us a little lesson there, Reese.
Yeah, thank you, Reese. Yeah, you know, as always,
thank you for listening and coming to bear witness to the fact that Canadian politics is not boring. It's become a passion of mine. It's become a passion of mine now to kind of just try and prove to people who don't care about politics in Canada that there's actually some stuff worth paying attention to.
Absolutely.
This is where I'm still contentious about this. I you've been incredibly entertaining so far, Reese, about Canadian politics. And sure, I'll agree that Canadian politics are not boring, but only because you've proved not that they're interesting, but that they're ridiculous. And in being ridiculous, they are not boring, but not necessarily interesting.
They definitely are a bit more interesting when you have a smart sounding gentleman with glasses who has a Welsh accent, British-esque accent telling you what's up. I mean, those are always my favorite podcasts.
You slap that accent on there.
Everything just sounds so marvelous. Smarter, more interesting.
I literally read somewhere that North Americans, when they hear a British accent or a UK accent explaining something to them, they automatically take it as a voice of authority.
Yes.
Like they know what they're talking about, right?
Dude, I just walk around telling people what to do. And making up facts that they believe. So.
I wouldn't listen to an audiobook unless it was a British person reading it.
I think, Brian. Stephen Fry is the ultimate British voice of authority,
yes.
I think.
In our podcast, I come across as the idiot, as the moron. Like, both of us don't know anything about Canadian politics. Reese is just learning about it a day before he tells me. And he's coming across as this genius who knows everything. And here I am like, duh, what? I don't know. And it's my mother was telling me, you should go on that. You should do a little bit of research before the show, Jesse. Just a little bit. Make yourself sound smarter. I'm like, now I'm thinking, maybe I should.
Yeah, but that's boring.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, Reese, make something up on the spot and tell us all. And I bet you.
Okay, in 1973. The first Canadian ever to reach the bottom of the ocean was a man called David Allen, and he died and he never came back.
Whoa, I believe that.
Wow. See, it sounds
just made
real
that up
to
off
me.
The top of my head. Made it,
it totally sounds real.
I just knew you were lying to me, but then after hearing you speak for just 3 seconds, I totally forgot.
Can we all have a moment of silence for David Allen?
Okay. If our listeners want to hear your show and find it, if they haven't discovered you yet, where can they find you?
You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, at Sick Boy Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Sick Boy Podcast on Facebook.
And TikTok. And we're on TikTok.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Brian got a TikTok.
God. No, get off TikTok.
Man. Yeah, I've been telling him no, but he just whatever, keeps guys. Hearing
Gen Z.
Yes.
Gen Z is the next
yeah, but
thing.
Sick Boy Podcast, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're into that thing and you're doing it, might as well go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review, because that shit's important. So.
Oh, thanks, guys. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.